My name is Keeve Nachman, and I'm the director of the Farming for the Future program at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. And I'm the moderator for today's session entitled Food Safety and Social Disparities, Antibiotic Resistance in the Food System A to Z. And before we get started with our fantastic presenter, I'm just going to give you a brief overview of the issue and get you a little bit acquainted. Before I get started, I have to mention that I have no disclosures to make. So food animal production has really changed over the last 50 years, and I've brought some data from USDA to demonstrate how it's actually changed. So this is a figure that shows poundage of animals produced for food between 1960 and 2010, and you'll see very clearly from this that production of animals has increased nearly threefold in all sectors of production, from turkeys to beef and veal, but most notably in broilers, where production has expanded quite substantially. In each year, the most recent estimate of food animal production is that we produce 9.1 billion animals. So we're producing a very, very large number of animals. And not only are we producing more animals now than we ever have before, but we're also producing them in a very different fashion. So this is a figure that demonstrates the number of broilers or meat chickens produced over time and compares that to the number of farms producing those chickens. So you'll see the top line, and I wish I had a laser pointer, demonstrates the number of farms between 1975 and 1995, and you'll see a very sharp decline in the number of farms actually raising broiler chickens, while simultaneously you'll see a fairly steady increase of the number of broilers produced at each farm. So we're really concentrating animals within farms, and we have far fewer farms than we ever have. And this trend has continued within the last 15 years. This is another slide that shows a very similar pattern in the U.S. hog industry over the same period of time. In addition to the changes in numbers of animals produced and the numbers of animals produced in individual farms, we're also concentrating farms in certain geographic regions. So this is a figure from a recent paper we published that demonstrates the broiler industry in 1949 as compared to 2007. Now what you'll notice is that each dot in the top map represents 50,000 broilers processed or produced for consumption annually. And in the second map, you'll see that each dot represents, we had to change the metric we used to actually represent broiler production, and each dot in the second map represents 1 million or more broilers produced in that location per year. And what you'll also note that's fairly interesting is that the production was spread out across the country in 1949, but by 2007, you'll see across the southeastern United States, most of the broiler production is really concentrated there into an area we like to call the broiler belt. So things are changing very rapidly in the industry. And along with the changes in the numbers of animals and the nature in which we produce animals, there are a variety of other production changes that are now commonplace within the industry. And one that is very germane to what we'll be talking about today is the use of antibiotics on a routine basis in food animal production. And if you're a physician or public health researcher, you may recognize that a number of these drugs that are approved for use in animals are the same as those that we use in human clinical medicine. So I just wanted to show briefly how subtherapeutic use, especially routine use of antibiotics in food animal production, selects for bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. So this is a pool of bacteria, and the bacterium that's purple carries genes that encode for resistance to a particular antibiotic. So when administering that antibiotic, you'll see the blue bacteria, which are susceptible to that antibiotic, die off and leave the one that's resistant to the bacteria. And that bacterium uses the microbial ecosystem to reproduce, and what you're left with is a pool of bacteria that are resistant to that antibiotic. And bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics pose public health risks because they're far more challenging to treat, and in many cases they'll become resistant to multiple antibiotics and can increase chance of mortality risk in hospitals and take longer time. So a report issued by the IOM in 2008 estimated that 19,000 deaths had occurred from hospital-acquired infections. Now, what's challenging to recognize as a researcher in this field is that the extent of the burden imposed by use of antimicrobials in food animal production has yet to be estimated. It's extremely challenging to know when a person with a resistant infection actually acquired that infection from either a hospital or from use in food animal production. Now, resistant infections require longer hospital stays and are typically more expensive to treat. In a particular study that was conducted comparing infections with methicillin-resistant Staph aureus to methicillin-susceptible Staph aureus, found that a hospital stay with MRSA was actually increased by, on average, 14 days. And the cost of that hospital stay was about $45,000 as compared to nearly $10,000 for methicillin-susceptible Staph aureus. And there have been a number of estimates that have been made to try and capture the societal burden of resistant infections. And the most recent one I've seen, the upper limit on that estimate was $26 billion per year. So it's a fairly significant public health issue. I just wanted to end with a quick introduction to some of the pathways of exposure to resistant bacteria, just to frame out what our speakers will be talking about today. And as we mentioned in the title of the talk today, we're focused most on food safety today. So the pathways of exposure, I think, that we'll be talking about relate to exposure to resistant bacteria on processed or slaughtered meats. But I also wanted to make a pitch for some other exposures that really pose social justice implications. Animal production workers come into contact with food animals and waste from food animals and have opportunities to be exposed to bacteria and resistant bacteria in the waste of those animals. And involvement directly with the animals, such as a chicken catcher, or in relation to management of animal waste, creates opportunities for those folks who are workers to be exposed to waste. But in addition to that, people living in communities surrounding these animal operations and sites where animal waste is spread are also at increased risks for coming into contact with those bacteria. And so these workers and these folks in the communities bear a disproportionate piece of the burden from resistant bacteria. And that's not to say that folks who are exposed through the dietary pathway or who may not disinfect food production surfaces are not equally exposed. But I felt negligent not mentioning something about the community and occupational exposures. Now, in terms of social justice with consumption of poultry or all meats that are produced using antibiotics, it's worth mentioning that there is a social justice differential in terms of access to meats that are produced without antibiotics. Consumption of meats without antibiotics meats without antibiotics have been demonstrated in the literature in a number of studies. Organic meats are less likely to carry bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics, whereas conventional meats are more likely to carry bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. So folks that can't afford organic meats may be at higher risk of coming into contact with those bacteria. So anyways, I'd like to start by introducing our first speaker, Lance Price. So you want to come up, Lance? So Dr. Price is a full-time faculty member in TGen's Division of Pathogen Genomics, where he directs two research centers, the Center for Microbiomics and Human Health and the Center for Food Microbiology and Environmental Health. In addition to his duties at TGen, Dr. Price is a senior science advisor for the Pew Charitable Trust's Human Health and Industrial Farming Campaign and a scientific advisor for the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future.